ओम शांति। So today we're going to talk about an expansion of the blessing of, I think, tomorrow's Murali. And it's connected with the whole subject of why are we in the confluence age? What is the benefit? What is the reward of being in the confluence age? And you know that sometimes it comes in the Murali that in an amazing way you come into Gyan and you start talking about it and then you run away in an equally amazing way. Sometimes you may ask yourself or someone may ask you that if you were not here in the confluence age, what would you be doing? And most people's answer, I have heard, is I'd probably be dead. Do you think? Yes. So the confluence age is for many, many things. Now, we are at the end of the cycle, as you know. And at the end of the cycle is the time of reckoning or, you know, making all the calculations of the pluses and minuses. And if there is rather more in the minus department, then you have to pay. Yes? And so one of the purposes of the confluence age is to enable us to settle all of our karmic accounts through yoga, as opposed to what Baba was speaking to us in the Murali today under the name of the hunter. Have you heard? The hunter is a whip, not somebody who's hunting. But the word hunter in Hindi English, Indian English, means a whip. So in the days of corporal punishment, which were the 1940s anyway, people would use a whip that would normally be used on a horse for a human being, especially a small boy, who was not doing what they were supposed to be doing, and this was called the hunter. And so Baba was talking today that, okay, you come into Gyan, and then if you do any karma which is against what Baba is saying, then you would experience more punishment for having done that. And so nobody likes punishment, right? Yes, you like? Mostly people like peace, love, you know, forgiveness, compassion, you know, all this sort of thing. But we don't volunteer ourselves, oh yeah, please punish me, God, you know. No, it's please, you know, you take it away and let me go through without any punishment. So he says, okay, you can settle karma by yoga, right? He says sometimes there are three ways to settle karma. One is the physical illness and any other kind of calamity that we may experience, including bankruptcy or everybody throws us out or any type of, you know, bad scene, we would say, bad scene in the drama. Of course, all scenes in the drama are good, but at the time you don't feel that way. You say, no, 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 this is a bad scene in the drama, for me at least. It may be good in the, you know, the larger scheme of things, and maybe later on you will say, oh yes, it was actually good. But at the time, it's rare to find a person who says, yeah, this too is one of those good scenes in drama. So there's that, and then the punishment through the Dharmaraj Puri, right? Dharmaraj Puri, or the you know, the experience in the subtle regions at the end when you settle things through visions as opposed to any other way. Because in order to sit in the soul world, the impure soul cannot go. The soul has to be pure and the soul has to go. So one way or the other, it has to become pure. So one of the purposes of coming in the confluence age, very practical purpose, is to settle our karmic accounts with yoga, which is the most dignified, the most royal, the most comfortable, etc., way of doing it. And so we say, yes, this seems good for us. We will settle our karma through yoga. But then you have to do rather a lot of yoga in order to actually settle the accounts. And then when you come into the confluence age, how do you come in the confluence age? What is the one thing that we all have in common, which Baba points to as our special speciality? And that is that we recognize Baba. Even if we have absolutely nothing else in common with any other BK, we have that in common, that we recognize Baba. And so that makes us come in the family. And we begin to follow the principles. You know, we become celibate, a vegetarian, we don't do recreational drugs, alcohol, what else? Anyway, we give up various things. And so one of the rewards of doing that is that you are no longer mainstream in the world. And the mainstream in the world is actually going in the general direction of global catastrophe, consciously or unconsciously or in denial or whatever, but it is going into global catastrophe, as you always see at the foot of the ladder picture, which is over here on my left. You see, at the bottom of the ladder you have raping and begging, and you have civil war, you have people who have fallen in the water, you have fire, some few volcanoes, etc. Anyway, this is where it's going. And we say, no, 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 let's go over the other side. You see where all the BKs are sitting, that side. And so we are going in the lift up to the Golden Age via the soul world. You can see very clearly on that picture. So one of the very nice rewards of the confluence age is that the moment we come to Baba, we stop going any further down towards the experience of destruction. And there is a very nice phrase that is used, which is translated in a variety of ways, but in Hindi it's basically Vinash Kale Vipreet Buddhi Vinashanti and Vinash Kale Preet Buddhi Vijayanti, right? You don't know whether it's right or not, but anyway, it's probably right. And what it means is, at the time of destruction, if you have an intellect which is loving, that means loving towards God, you will be victorious. And at the time of destruction, if you have an intellect which is having hatred for God, you will be destroyed, or you will experience destruction. And so Once we come into the confluence age, we receive knowledge. And ignorance, or not having knowledge, means that the intellect is having hatred for God. Whether we feel love for God or not is a separate story. But usually most people are subscribed to the idea of God being omnipresent. Some of you may have subscribed to that and some of you may not. But if you subscribe to the idea of God being omnipresent, that is the same as having hatred in the intellect for God at the time of destruction. So hatred is not a feeling that I want to kill him, that sort of thing. No. Hatred for God, or viparit buddhi, is that the concept about God that you entertain in your intellect, that you believe is right, is highly antagonistic to the honor, reality, and the possibility of having a decent relationship with God. And so that goes in the category of hatred for God. Because if you think God is everywhere and everywhere is in a mess, then God is in a mess. And it's not called love. Right? So it's not, none of these words have anything to do with emotions. They are to do with intellectual positions in regard to God. Also, they're called attitudes also. Position that you take. So when we get knowledge, knowledge is, okay, you are a soul, not a body. And what that means, if you accept that, is that you give up being a materialist. Now you will say, well, I was anyway spiritual. But as long as you say, I have a soul, the implication is that you are a materialist. Because it means I am a body, and everything to do with I gives highest priority to material values. And material values are the things which distance a person from God. And so if a person is a materialist, that is, they say, I am a body and I have a soul, then they have hatred for God, by definition. Nothing to do with feelings. You see, so this is all in the intellect. So knowledge is the key thing. Baba says, you are a soul and you have five essential elements of the soul, spiritual elements, which are purity, peace, inner power, love, and bliss. I do not include happiness in my list because, according to my analysis, happiness is a byproduct of doing good karma as opposed to an essential element. And so the original state of the soul is when these five elements of purity, peace, inner power, love, and bliss are full. And you can also say that these are the essential qualities of God. He is called the ocean of peace, purity, love. He is called blissful, Anandswarupa. When in the beginning, when Sri Baba introduced himself, he said something like Nija Swarupam Anandam Anandswarupam. Right? Anand. So he exists in a state of bliss. which is nothing to do with anything that he did or didn't do. So it's nothing to do with any consequences of any karma, but the, you know, I am Shiva, the dot, the benefactor. And the seed, and I stay in a state of bliss. So this is Sri Baba's introduction at its most elemental level. And imagine yourself, we see, we have to become like Baba. So in the confluence age, one of the functions of the confluence age is to tell us that we have to become like God. There's no other religion that says that you have to become like God. There are religions which say that you are part of God, which is wrong, and it's again part of the hatred in the intellect for God, because a soul is a unique. It cannot be brought into existence, and it cannot be taken out of existence. So this is new. And God is also like that. He is not brought into existence, nor is he taken out of existence. And so the reality is that all of us are permanent. And he is permanently immutable, changeless, and we are changeable once we enter into the realm of matter or the cycle. So I think that one of the most valuable things about the confluence age, or the reward of the confluence age, is that he gives us the knowledge of the cycle. And so we have, where is he? Over here, the cycle. So this is a good room for class because it's got all the right pictures in it. And so, you see, the sanskaras of Shiva Baba are called the sanskaras of knowledge. And knowledge is the cycle, right? You are a soul and you go round and round and up and down. That's it. That's the knowledge. Is it? That's all. That's simple. You come down onto the earth, into the world of matter, and you begin to go round. And you go from golden age, silver age, copper age, iron age. And when you've reached the end of it, you settle your accounts, you return to your original stage, which means full from empty, and you fill up from Shiva Baba, and then you go back. That's it. And you start again, and you keep doing that forever and ever and ever. And so most people say, what is the point of that? And so then they're not Brahmins if they say that. Because it's a materialistic question. So if you are body conscious, you will say, what's the point? If you are soul conscious, you will say, wah. So it's up to you. It really doesn't matter whether you're body conscious or soul conscious, because who cares? If you are soul conscious, and you hear the knowledge, I'm a soul, he is Jeev Baba, and this is the drama, and we go up and round forever, and you say, wah, you're home free. So that's why there's nothing like overcrowding in heaven, because very few people have that reaction. Now, from a materialistic point of view, this knowledge is completely unacceptable. But from a spiritual point of view, it's absolutely right. And so You cannot be a materialist and in the confluence age. You may be in Madhuban, but you are in the Iron Age. Because you're in linear thinking and you're in materialist attitude. And so you can't possibly understand any of this stuff. So that's okay. You can be a servant. It's all right. We don't mind. We need more. It's okay. So the thing is about this knowledge is, if you like it or you don't like it, it really doesn't matter. If you like it, there's greater competition. If you don't like it, no problem for the rest of us. You know? So, you see what I mean? So it's a very different approach. And Baba says, I would prefer not to see you laboring. When we're in materialistic consciousness, we struggle a lot. What is the point? What's my role? My God, I don't know. Where's my role? I can't find it. You know, like you've lost your keys or something. Your role is what you're doing. And if you want to change your role, then you change what you're doing. And so in Baba's language, he says, change your sanskaras. And he's been telling us that for quite some time. And so people try in a variety of ways. A lot of people who imagine some, you know, they visualize this great cosmic scalpel with which to slit their soul in half and throw away the bad half. Of course, this is a very body conscious approach. It's completely impossible to do it because the soul is indivisible. And so when you interpret Baba's instruction, change your sanskaras or remove your bad sanskaras, you interpret it in some kind of surgical manner, you will be laboring like anything, but you will definitely not be successful. And whatever sanskaras you are attempting to cut out, they will return in double the force, much like how Hercules had attempted to cut off the heads of the many-headed Hydra in his labors. You must have heard of that story, no? Yes? You know? No? We don't just only have Indian mythology, but we have all kinds of other mythology as well. And in the Western world, which most of us have come from, there is the Roman mythology and the Greek mythology. So Hercules is one of the Greek heroes, and he was a god, only he had got fed up and eaten up his children, which is not a very divine thing to do, but anyway, he did that. And so a punishment is he had to do 12 labors. And if you look up Hercules in the internet, you will find the story. And so there's a variety of ways in which it's given. Like any myth, it varies according to who tells you the story. But basically, you can interpret the story of Hercules as very much the story of a Brahmin's work to purify themselves during the period of the confluence age. So cutting off the many-headed Hydra corresponds, in my view, to our attempt to finish off our old sanskaras. The Hydra is a snake, you see. And so vices are often described or given as a metaphor of a snake. You see the picture of Krishna, you're not here, but when you go to ORC, there's got a new art gallery and there's a picture of Krishna dancing on top of a multiple-headed cobra. And so Baba has very often mentioned to us that in the confluence age, your relationship with the five vices is that you're dancing on them. In other words, they're not a problem. Or they are a canopy for you. Sometimes you see Vishnu lying on an amazing bed made of a big cobra with five heads or more, and he's being the canopy. So when we're struggling with our five vices, then we're back in the Iron Age. So one aspect of the reward of the confluence age is my relationship with the five vices is they're my canopy, or I'm dancing on them, but either way they're not particularly problematic. They're just there as a toy, as a fan, as a canopy or whatever, but definitely not as anything dangerous or problematic. I see. So in the confluence age we have the information necessary to develop a completely different relationship with the five vices. And so when you are in spiritual consciousness, then your relationship with matter is that it is an instrument for you to use when you decide, for what purpose you decide, if you decide. And the thing is that in the confluence age, we come to Baba, we recognize him, we love him, we receive all kinds of benefits from being his child, and then he says, okay, now thing is that you are not deities right now, and you're supposed to be, and you used to be. So, I'm making a school, which is here, for becoming deities. You all attended Jayanti Ben's class yesterday evening, yes? And you remember that she was talking about how Brahma, Baba and Mama looked like deities. They had emerged their deity sanskaras. And whenever anybody would see them, they would see, yes, you know. So if Mama was saying, our aim and object is to become deities, and she was the embodiment of that, then people would say, yeah, that's very believable. See, because she was the embodiment of it, they say, obviously, yeah, I know. And with Brahma Baba, Jayanti Ben was saying that he, no matter what, he looked like an emperor, though he may have been in very simple clothes. Have you seen Brahma Baba's clothes? Lachudadi has them. And once a year, she'll take them out of the suitcase and wash them all and put them back again. And so they can be seen, they exist. Yeah? And not more than a few meters from where we sit. And so it's very interesting seeing Brahma Baba's clothes, because he had a pretty ordinary kind of sweater, because after all in winter it's cold here, and then he had his shawl that you can see in his picture here, which is a regular woolen, you know, rough woolen shawl, and he had a dhoti, a cotton cloth, you know, half the length of a sari, and then his shirt in rough cotton cloth, which you still see the Madhuban Nivasis wearing. And he had his little radio that he would listen to the BBC World, that's still there, you know. And he was living in Baba's room, but it was half the size, and that's the same bed what he was sleeping on. And then there's the little bolsters and the mattress on the side. He would sit down on that in traditional manner, and that was it. There wasn't any bathroom. There was kind of makeshift bathroom outside. And hot water, he had to boil it up. And simple mountain village life. Yet, In spite of all of that, when people would meet, they would see that this is an emperor because the sanskaras were emerged. So I think that a very important reward of the confluence age is that we have enough time to work with the three points, really. The one point is, I am a soul, dot. And the second point, he is God, dot. Supreme soul. And the third point, drama. You see. And only people who work with these three points comfortably are really, you can say, really good, strong Brahmins. Because working with these three points is really learning to become skilled in the gifts of the confluence age, which is the knowledge of the three dots. Some Murali, just three dots, you see. So what is possible in the confluence age, the attainment of the confluence age that we can have, each and every one of us individually, which we arrive at in our own way, and that is called karmatit stage. Karmatit stage is when you are completely free from the effect of having done or being inclined to do any karma that is based on body consciousness, or we can say materialism. So materialism is not liking to have the latest computer or mobile phone or car or that kind of thing. Materialism is defined as, I am a body and probably I have a soul somewhere. This materialism. To identify the self as a material object. That's materialism. And it gives rise to material values. And material values are based in material desires. And that means appetites, sense pleasures, appetites. And so we get greed, where you want something to eat or to have or to hold or whatever. And you have lust, which is another kind of greed. You just want to eat somebody's body. That's lust. Or you can have lust for power. You want power over people. You know. And you have ego, which is a mask to represent yourself as something that you're not. A substitute self-respect, a fake. So it's called false ego. And it's very damaging to other people and to yourself. We have anger, which is what you have when you don't get what you want. And then we have attachment, which is emotional dependence on someone or something. So all of these five vices are arising from lack of spiritual power. And a depletion of these elements that I was speaking about earlier, these purity, peace, inner power, love, and bliss. So I call them elements because there's five of them, and it's in contrast to the five elements of matter, which are air, earth, fire, water, and ether, you see. So if you look at yourself in terms of your body, you will find that you are basically warm, oozing, moving mud. That's it. That's what you are if you think you're a body. Warm, oozing, mud. Because we ooze around, we move around, right? Warm mud. Earth, water, a little bit of fire, and that's it. We move around in space, ooze around in space. So we're still back in the old primordial ooze. Body consciousness is a very primitive state of consciousness. And material values have given rise to science, because the intellect focused in matter has developed this control over matter. But if you go the other way and you say, okay, I'm a soul, then you become more interested in attaining control over spiritual things, which is the mind, intellect, sanskaras. So when you are body conscious, your intellect is totally focused in materialism, material values, appetites, and all of your energy gets sort of used up in that. And so the thought, when you are in materialism, can only be waste thought or negative thought. It's not possible to have a positive thought if you are in materialist consciousness. Because a positive thought is, I am a peaceful soul. And that can't arise in the mind of a body conscious person. A body conscious person means a soul who thinks it's a body. And a soul conscious person is a soul who knows it's a soul. So the difference between materialism and spirituality is very, very slight when you go into the refinement of it. But this is the one key that Baba gives us in the confluence age. And when he says to us, be soul conscious, he's saying, remember what you are and consciously forget what you thought you were, which you actually aren't. And understand that you have been in that consciousness for a very long time, which has caught you. So the intellect is completely under the influence of sense impressions. So for example, if you look at science, and science says, this is objective, right? Objective. And then you look at spirituality and it says, no, 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 subjective. We are subjective. You may be objective, we are subjective. Now, if you look further at science, you will find that objective reality is arrived at through sense perceptions. Because you want to know whether something is there, or how big it is, or what color it is, or you know, how heavy it is. All these scientific principles are only able to be perceived through the sense perceptions. And even if you do it through some telescope or microscope or some mathematical calculation, that mathematical calculation cannot arise or exist or occur unless somebody thought about it and figured it out on the basis of sense perception. And so, in fact, all of this objective reality ultimately is subjective. And nowadays the scientific people are talking about the effect of the experimenter, which is the subjective, and you can't actually have objective reality because you, who decide what something is, are a subject. So anyway, that's okay. Now, a soul conscious person will place themselves in this knowledge in the center of the cycle. And so Baba has said to us, you know, one of the things that he gives us is this title, Swadarshan Chakradhari, the spinner of the cycle of self-knowledge, or the possessor of the cycle of the self. So if you see for a minute that picture, there's a small white dot in the middle, which corresponds to the hands of the clock. And the cycle is saying that we have now reached just before midnight. And so we have this program called the Call of the Time. And this is based on some Murli points in which Baba said, what is time telling us? At what point are we in time? Because the soul is in the context of time and space at this time. With the soul is eternal. There's never been a time ever when you did not exist as a self, as an individual person. You may have had different body, different name, all that, but you're still the same occupant of this body, you see, or any other body. And so you cannot say, I am a woman, or nor can you say, I am a man, because it varies from time to time. Sometimes you're a woman, other times you're a man, so you cannot say which one you are. In fact, you are not either male or female, nor are you an it. You're not a he, you're not a she, and you're not an it. So, what are you? You see, if you say, I'm a point, your intellect immediately thinks of an object. Right? Because the intellect is body conscious. Well, you have the knowledge, oh, you're a soul. Acha? Maybe. Yes, I knew that. But still, when you think, I am a soul, you think of it as a physical item. Because the mind and intellect have been trained and tuned for a good number of thousands of years to think in a material way. So you imagine a dot in your mind, or you draw one on a piece of paper. This is me. It's not you. You know, or we say this is God. This is not at all God. There's some plastic thing up there. You can turn a light on. It's a representation, no doubt. You see. Well, when you see a photograph of yourself, you say, oh, that's me. It's not you. But we have a habit of speaking of our image as if it is ourself. If you look at yourself in the mirror, you will say, that's me. Of course it's not you, it's a piece of glass. And there's a reflection of your body in it. But you have never seen yourself, nor has anyone ever seen you. Is it? So you cannot say, I'm ugly or I'm beautiful, short, tall, thin or fat, because those descriptions do not apply to you. They apply only to the warm mud in which you're moving around. Right? So the whole thing about the confluence age is we keep every day getting this information and we keep processing it with a body conscious intellect. But slowly there's a shift that takes place, and the intellect gradually, but not in a consistent manner, it gradually, like by hops of insight, gets slightly soul conscious for a second or two, and then reverts back to being body conscious. Isn't that what happens? So some people say, oh, you know, I've been in remembrance for 12 hours today. Baba will say, nonsense. Or as Dianteben was saying in yesterday evening's class, regarding the sister who didn't pick up the parcel, no yoga. So she was describing yoga as being tuned in with Baba, or what's important. And the train was late, so therefore in body consciousness it's more important to get the train than the parcel. Although if she had said, okay, no, I'll get the parcel, this is important, probably the train would have been late, you know, whatever. So we find this in the confluence age, that there's a lot of trust involved, because the thing is, it's not that we have blind faith. We do gradually, with increasing depth, understand this knowledge, slowly, slowly. You know, you can hear in the Murli, day after day after day, consider yourself a soul and remember the Father, right? Every Murli it says that at least once or twice, you know. But after hearing about 4,000 Murlis, you may say, oh, got it. Because the slow shift in the condition of the condition of the intellect from body conscious to soul conscious is marked by moments of insight where you say, yes, I'm a soul. You know, now you've known that for a number of years, but you get it at another level every so often, and it becomes a significant moment. Now, you must have experienced this, yes? And so the other thing about the confluence age is you seem to be kind of going along, going along, going along, going along for a while, and you hit a brick wall. Isn't it? You say, I don't know. Can't go any further. And you struggle and do all these things. And you either leave it, go away, or you make it through and you find yourself that you have to go to a higher level. You're doing the same thing, listening the same Murli, but at a higher level. And the confluence age seems to me to be like this, where you go along for a while and then you go up and then you go along for a while. We need a French-speaking brother? Huh? But you're the translator. So anyone French? Qui est français qui voudrait parler à un invité qui parle français, qui est francophone? Oui? Alors, tu parles avec le frère et il va te présenter à la personne. Right? So, what we're trying to do here is, I think, to bring our stage to such a state of subtlety and spirituality that we are constantly tuned in, isn't it? So, when you get it, you have it. And when you haven't got it, if somebody has got it and they tell you it's like this, you won't get it because you didn't get it. Nothing you can do about that. Nothing anybody can do about that. So what do? We kind of keep listening to the comprehensible points, which are understandable in varying degrees, but okay, soul conscious, soul conscious, soul conscious, soul conscious, I'm a soul dot, you know, peaceful, I don't feel peaceful. You know, so we have to work with the knowledge. So churning is very important. Because what churning will do, churning the Murli, is it will generate insights. If you don't churn, you're not going to get any insights. You may churn and still not get any insights, but if you keep on churning, you will get insights. Because the knowledge, the words that are in the Murali do not come from a human source. They do not come from a human source. For example, Baba says very, very simple things. He says, I am your father, teacher and Satguru. And nobody else can make the same claim. So we have to investigate that claim. Why does he say nobody else can make that claim? What is actually a father anyway? So he says, okay, you have three fathers. You have Lokik, Alokik, Paralokik. We do, okay. You know, this is how we deal with it, isn't it? A Lokik father, I don't like him anyway. Or, ooh, he's wonderful, marvelous, fantastic. Either way, you're either attached or not interested. And it doesn't really, it's basically you get born to a mother and father with whom you have some karma. Right? You cannot land up with anybody that you do not have karmic accounts with, because this is the time for settling karma. And so most families are described by psychologists as dysfunctional. Most. In USA they say 94%, which is a euphemism for 100%. And it may or may not be the same everywhere else, but whatever it is high, you see. And so many people say, oh, yeah, my mother doesn't understand me, my father doesn't understand me, they don't agree, whatever, you know. And so you experience some or another disturbance in direct regard to your mother and father. And then you have grandparents, brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles. So we come into Gyan and we have something called Brahmin culture. As opposed to Eastern and Western. And what that means is that we, in our body consciousness, we have a lot of preconceptions. They are like this and we are like that. Whichever they and we it happens to be, it's like that. And Brahmin culture is there is no us and them, there's only us. So we have to practice seeing the soul. If you see the soul, you're looking at something that is not visible. Right? We can't see souls. So you have to do something that is not possible. I remember Daddy Jenki, when earlier, a long time ago, she said, go to America and become Indian. Okay. Of course it's not possible, but yet it's a very good instruction. It's very tricky, you see. And it's rather like, see the soul. Well, I can't see a soul. How do you see a soul? Okay, I imagine this person is not there, there's a dot walking along at 5.5 feet above sea level. You know? And you have to go through all of this rigmarole to try to figure out what you're looking at and to adjust your eyes. Because of course he says, okay, one of the rewards of the confluence age is from two-eyed or even one-eyed, you become three-eyed. And so we have to keep our third eye open, and we can see the soul with our third eye. A third eye is also called the divine eye. the eye with which we see things that are non-physical, that these two eyes cannot see. So materialism means that whatever we can see with our two eyes, we consider that that is real. And spirituality is that whatever you can see with your two eyes, it is not real. And whatever you can see with your third eye, it is real. And so Baba says, see the soul, which you can't see. See the soul in its original state, which it isn't in right now. And this is the instruction. Now, it's very difficult to do that. And in fact, if you're busy doing that, it is not possible to see any of the things that we normally see, which give rise to waste or negative thoughts. Because if you see a soul in its original form, then your feelings about that soul are positive. Because it's not possible to have a negative feeling about a soul in its original form, is it? How can you? Oh, this soul is too fat, too thin, doing the wrong thing. No, not possible. And also, when you have a pure vision on a soul, that means you see the person as a soul in their original stage, all you can do is say, okay, there is a soul, and they have an original stage, which is somewhere in there, and that's all you can really say. Nothing further to add, no comment. Whatever their behavior is, it's nothing to do with any of it. Right? So one of the rewards of the confluence age is that you are not at all disturbed by disturbing behavior. Isn't it? There may be some disturbing behavior, no doubt, because people are still mostly in the Iron Age and so they behave in that manner. But our instruction is you see the soul in the original stage. And so your feeling about that soul is, well, we have a pure, peaceful, loving, powerful, blissful dot here. And no further comment required. Is it? What do you think? And so basically what we are learning by this is mind your own business. And what is our business? Our business is to become a pure, peaceful, powerful, loving point of light who floats in remembrance of God through this 3D movie that's going on identically every 5,000 years. Isn't it? And so we have two very important questions. Who am I and what am I? Again and again we ask ourselves, who am I? Okay. You can't say a soul, because that's what am I? Right? What am I? I'm a soul. Okay, pure, peaceful, powerful, loveful, blissful dot. That's my what. Then my who. Who am I? Well, 84 person. Isn't it? There's no Brahmin who will say, no, I'm at 83. There's no proof. You see. Actually, there's no proof of being an 84 either, but your claim is, well, if I'm not going to have 84 births, there's no point. So in answer to what is the point of having 84 births every 5,000 years, that's the point. Having 8, that means you don't miss anything. You go all the way from the extreme of heaven to the extreme of hell, and then you let go and start again. So sometimes he says, imagine yourself in the soul world. Sri Baba's perspective on all of this is from the soul world. And if he is in the body of Brahma, and he's seeing the children, he'll see, you know, golden age, silver age, he'll know who's who. You don't know who you are, he knows who you are. You don't know who you're sitting next to. Right? Take a look. You don't know. Confluence, aged manifestation, the simple body in which we are completely disguised from ourselves and from each other. So we have absolutely no idea who we are, but we know that we must be someone because we're here. And so Baba says, you receive the blessing of being a possessor of the cycle of self-realization, and you have passed through, he says, you have passed through 84 births, 8 in the golden age, 12 in the silver age, 21 in the copper age, and 63 in the, 42 in the iron age, and then we have this one. And if you add it all up, that's 84. So, okay, that's reasonable. We like that, right? You like 84 births? We're used to being 84 birth souls, right? Yes? Or not? Do you think about this? In 84 births, you have enough time to do all of the different things that are in you. In one birth, I mean, one of the reasons I didn't believe in one birth is there's not enough time, sorry. Too many possibilities, you know. So all the possibilities, all the way from the absolute perfection, golden age, heaven, all the way to the deep, dark depths of hell, you know. And the total opposite, you know, we go from this absolute perfect something to this absolute imperfect something else. And both of them are me. So one of the rewards of the confluence age is I come to terms with the extremes within myself. Right? Because we have golden age sanskaras, silver age sanskaras, copper age sanskaras, iron age sanskaras, and there is no cosmic scalpel that will cut neatly down the middle and make us into half souls. You can't have a half soul. And there isn't any soul that goes golden age, silver age, golden age, silver age, golden age, silver age. Doesn't work. Doesn't exist. Cannot be. Golden age, silver age, copper age, iron age. And so the rewards, one of the rewards of the confluence age is to achieve a stage of perfect neutrality regarding your iron aged manifestation and the iron aged manifestation of any other soul, because it really doesn't matter. Because every soul has golden age, silver age, copper age, iron age, and everyone has a perfect right to behave in whatever way they are behaving. Whether it's good or bad doesn't really make any difference to anything. And so when Baba says, see the soul in its original form, he's also saying, do not be distracted by some section of that soul. You see, because it's not real. You're distracted by the emptiness of a full thing, which doesn't have any much meaning. Do you understand? To be focused on the fullness of the full thing has more meaning. And anyway, all of these souls are empty, slowly getting full, some more quickly than others. But then he gives another instruction. Anyway, focus on me, because I'm anyway full. So we interact with all the various different souls in their empty state. And one of the things, one of the mistakes we do, which is a part of the Iron Age, is to attempt to fill ourselves from another empty soul, otherwise known as the vice of attachment. Right? And so people call this love. Ooh, I love you. What it means is, ooh, I think I'll eat you for lunch today. In Spanish, they say, yo te quiero. Right? Any Spanish people here? And it, when you say to somebody, yo te quiero, it means, I want you. It means, I want to eat you. Because you look like tasty. And I feel jolly well hungry. So, body consciousness is a sort of mutual consuming of each other. And it's not comfortable, you see. But Baba says, take from me, because I have so much that even if all of you are drawing on me constantly, there's still enough for everybody. So it's logical to focus on Baba. So one of the great rewards of the confluence age is he frees us up from this completely illogical habit of attempting to fill ourselves from empty beings. And we start to fill ourselves from Shiva Baba. And we also come to terms and be very neutral about our full state and our empty state, otherwise known as our good state and our bad state. But I think it helps to consider bad things as being just an attribute of emptiness, spiritual emptiness. So if somebody's empty, it's like, it's not bad, they're just empty. And empty people do what we call bad things. But if we, as Baba said in the last Murali of the last season, stay away from good and bad, you see? Stay away from good and bad. It's just, okay, here is a soul under the influence of being empty. So, big deal. All of us are eternal and immortal. No one can get lost. So somebody may die, but they're still not lost. Somebody may do something and damage something, or any of these so-called bad things. Normally, we see a bad thing and then we want to get retribution. And then we get into a karmic escalation. So in Gyan, Baba says, you know, do not take the law into your own hands. It's all up to Baba. He's in charge of all these things. You get on with your practice of filling yourself up from Baba and becoming like Baba. And so we're just basically involved in a process of emptying out ourselves from a number of misconceptions and a number of attitudes that have become addictions, very deep mental habits of negativity due to our intellectual concepts, which are based on materialism and which are very strong habits but which actually don't have any foundation in truth. So I think probably a very good thing to do in the confluence age is really focus on Shiva Baba, who is truth, Brahma Baba, who is a model of how that truth expresses itself in the physical form, and also Mama. Because in Baba and Mama, what you have is two things. You have a male and a female. You have a married person and an unmarried person. And so everybody is either male, female, married or unmarried. These are the possible categories of a person. And so you can be female married, or you can be male unmarried. You still only need Baba and Mama as an example of how to function in this world in any of these categories. And then, again, going away from your body, you see how Mama and Baba made themselves bodiless. Baba's last words, egoless, viceless, bodiless. That means spiritual as opposed to material. Because if you're in your spirituality, then you are fully pure, powerful, peaceful, loveful, blissful. And so basically we're trying to withdraw our involvement in this drama and make ourselves complete so that we live in this world, but like Daddy Jenki was saying the other way, akarta, abhokta, asochta. And Daddy Jenki very often says, don't think, right? You must have heard that a few times. Don't think. No, I have to think. Of course I will think. How can I not think? No, she said, don't think. Mama had spoken about having a plain intellect. You just keep the self as a pure, peaceful, powerful, loveful, blissful being and vibrate. Even in the answer to the question, who am I? I am a person who sends out vibrations. A dot that radiates these vibrations of purity, peace, power, love and bliss. That's a good role to play. Then you're not worried about, what about me? I couldn't go, not enough money, this, that, all these worries that we have that interfere with functioning like that. See, if we are just being a pure soul, sending out vibrations and keeping in mind the different churnings of the knowledge, that's a very good service. Because the world at this time is spiritually empty and full of disturbance, disturbed thoughts, negative thoughts, and they are quietened down by our vibrations, you see. So the ultimate reward of the confluence age is to be content to be who I am and what I am. And once we are fully content, fully kind of closed in upon ourselves, and I think it's very interesting, this power to withdraw. I think at different times in the process of the confluence age, we will especially work on different powers. And the powers are the gifts that Baba gives us as we get born. And then we gradually become skilled in their application and use, just like the knowledge of the cycle is a tool or an instrument, because it doesn't make any difference whether the cycle is 5,000 years or not. That's not the point. And the point is that all possible things are included in a circle, and it's possible for you to know all the different configurations of yourself in the course of time. That means you can know yourself. See, and once you understand something, it brings you to a still point of soaking in and digesting that, yes, this is me. And I'm glad that I'm me. You know, you have to come to terms with yourself and understand yourself. Then you don't need anything. You find your power. You're not hungry for power. You're not needy. So you don't need to go around consuming other empty people. Because you're being sustained by Sheep Baba. And then the thing that you play your part with Baba. So you can practice going downstairs with love. in the company of Baba. After this, now yeah, we have 5 minutes, we will stop and you'll go put your shoes on with love. And go down the stairs with love. And go along, maybe see Baba's room, his hut, Tower of Peace. Go for lunch, eat with love. I'm sustained by Baba. And I'm going to go and down to Shantivan and listen to Baba. Huh? Wherever I get to sit, it's okay. As for positioning my oozing warm mud. So that I, the soul, draw his words and sustain myself, nourish myself, feed my mind with these thoughts and become a cooperative soul. I think it's nice to be a cooperative soul. Whatever is needed, do that. You see, because Baba has said service is when what you do makes you happy and them happy. If not, it's not service. So I think being a cooperative soul and then applying the power to withdraw so that I become a contented point of light, might, peace, love, and purity, you see. And it's very interesting thinking about purity. What is the feeling of purity? Right? You can imagine what is the feeling of bliss, right? And go for that. You can imagine what is the feeling of power as opposed to weakness. You want to feel powerful. You can imagine, go for that. You can imagine peace. You can imagine love. You can't imagine purity. Can you? Try and imagine what is it like to experience being pure. I think it has something to do with, you know, you can play with it, but it's a very interesting thing to think of yourself in terms of these five elements or qualities of the soul. Pure, peaceful, loveful, blissful, powerful. And it's so interesting to go into all of these that it doesn't really matter what's going on in the drama. So we adjust to it, whatever it happens to be. And we tolerate it, whatever it happens to be. But ultimately we're withdrawing from it because we're going back to the soul world. And so to be a point of contented light is nice. You don't ultimately need anything more, you're full, you see. So the reward of the confluence age is to go through hell if necessary, but get yourself to the point where you are a pure, peaceful, loveful, contented point of light. Because any time you're going through hell and this and that, it's a settlement of karma. Whether we agree with it or not, whether we like it or not, whether we feel good about it or not, settlement of karma takes place in the confluence age so that we are settling our karma voluntarily, we are ready for it, we say, okay, whatever maya has to come, let it come, whatever illness has to come, let it come, whatever embarrassment has to come, let it come, because it's payment, settlement. And so we have to try to fill up a lot so that we have plenty in our account for the settlement, because when settlement comes, it takes a hefty chunk of your accumulation of yoga. And if you haven't bothered to have yoga, then it'll take a hefty chunk of whatever there is. And in that case, it will disturb you because it gets you emotionally upset and so on and so forth. But I think that if we have at least 3.5 hours yoga a day, then we can keep up with the settlement of karma. But if we have less than that, then the settlement of karma tends to feel more exhausting and depleting, and then you need again another shot in the dot of yoga power, you know? So I think that all of the things is gradually pushing us to this stage where we have self-respect, we have contentment, we use the third eye, we focus on the pure, the peaceful, the loveful, the blissful, and we make everything profitable, use our time, talents, energy, etc. in Baba's work, because there's profit for us. It's not going to do anything else. So it's a kind of enlightened self-interest that we can pursue in the confluence age and experience. I think for me anyway, I experience like I'm completely free. You know, Baba promises mukti, jivan, mukti. I experience that, complete freedom. You get along with everybody, whether they're good, bad or indifferent, doesn't make any difference. You know, you get stuff, you lose stuff, it doesn't matter because anyway you're going. Simplify your life as much as possible. Be happy in every scene, be loveful. Very good. You don't have to prove anything. Very little matters. Get on with being who you are and love and respect everyone. You'll enjoy your confluence age, and whenever the call comes, okay, thank you, let's go. Until that time, instrument consciousness. Because Baba has given us a chance to make a great deal of fortune by being an instrument, which means not my way, his way. Right? Not my will be done, his will be done. You know that one? So just whatever it is, be a cooperative soul. Very nice, nothing wrong with that. Cooperate with the family, cooperate with the Baba, and you know, if it's rolling poppers, that's what Daddy Jenki was doing. That led to a very good world drama stage activity because of love, the attitude of love for God. So another good thing that we have, a great reward of the confluence age, where you find your love for Baba, open that up and make that machinery run. It's a very, very good machinery. Do everything with love for Baba. And then you see, you start discarding all the so-called morality of the Iron Age. Because it's questionable. It's based in body consciousness. And it's a bit corrupt. So we want to be completely true, free, pure. Focus on truth and melt on the mountain, disappear. That's really also what we're going to end up as, a disappearing dot. Once I saw a rocket go up, you know, and then when it reached the edge of the atmosphere, it just disappeared. Because you can't see past the atmosphere, eyes don't go, right? So it just disappeared before my very eyes. Because our sense perceptions are very limited. They're limited to day-to-day, ordinary eating, drinking, moving around and that sort of thing. But our third eye can do other things. Okay?
But there's clarity, this acceptance of what's happening, where is the motivation for intense effort making?
You see, intense effort making means deep love for Baba. And you can't really have that unless you're pretty neutral about all the distractions. So that the motivation comes from inside. So if you're looking for it outside, it'd be like that queen trying to find her necklace. So these are all internal things. So we have to be turned within. And the mind is focused upon itself. So all this is basically 3D wallpaper. You are in the middle, and it's just 3D wallpaper. Focus on the self and you will find yourself, because it doesn't matter who anybody else is, it matters who I am. So there's just I, the soul, Baba, and everything else is 3D wallpaper, oozing mud, warm. Right? That's soul consciousness. But we have to understand we still have a lot of body consciousness. So all these things that disturb our ego, you know, that's very useful because it sort of destroys itself. We have to be egoless. Materialism means ego problems, false ego. You're focused in that false ego, so distraction, going on the wrong path. Come back to the point, I the soul, she Baba, drama. And Baba said everything in the drama is good, so you already know it's good, so you don't need to say this part is better than the other part or all that. No, good, everything good, okay, fine, let it be. Get on with who you are. And whatever we do doesn't matter. Success, failure, doesn't matter. They love you, they hate you, so doesn't matter. Right? What difference does it make to anything? You see, Baba is so detached. We have to be like that. Content. Okay, let's have a moment of meditation. Om Shanti.